fighting for America.
Please join me now in showing appreciation for their work, their legacy, and their friendship. That's sufficient. I don't want you to get more applause than I got.
Fighting for Idaho.
As someone growing up in the Middle East, you know that if you say the smallest thing against Muhammad, or if you say, I don't believe in this, you will be killed.
Fighting for you.
My wife delivered twins, so it's just been hectic.
Are you changing the diapers yet?
Oh, yeah, I've done that from day one. No big deal.
All right. Wow.
That's what real men do, Kevin.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 5 after 8 at 580 KIDO, 33 right now in Eagle. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're joined by our great friend, author of The Thane Doctrine, State Senator Stephen Thane. Senator Thane, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Now, you wanted to correct some stuff that we were talking about, and you know, I always love to be corrected. Facts, who needs the facts? That's why we have you here. But we were talking about a recent article that came out that said that Idaho ranked 46th when it came to education test scores. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what you said this morning in an article by Kevin Reichert of the Idaho Ed News. They said Idaho ranked 46th overall, but we ranked 23rd in test scores and 13th in graduation rates. And most of the F scores or low scores were inputs, like pre-kindergarten access, amount of spending per child, and I call those inputs. But the outcomes, what our teachers are doing, what our students are doing, were actually fairly good.
Yet we never really get that. We just get the negativity about the state education system.
Yeah, well, we'll talk education another day, but
no, I'm with you, and we're going to get to our special guest here in a minute. But quickly, what do you make of the pay raise proposal for the teachers offhand?
You know, money by itself will not improve education, so it needs to be done in a strategic manner that focuses on students and student outcomes. I think Superintendent Sherry Ibarra, talking about where students can flourish, focus on the students and paying teachers in a way that helps students. For example, paying teachers to get a master's degree in a content area so more students can take dual credit classes in high school. That's a strategic area.
Right. And you were all about that before that became the rage.
Yes, I was.
That's how I met you. I took issue with those things. And once again, I was wrong and you were right about that. I remember that, Bill.
Well,
congratulations.
You have a great memory, Kevin.
Well, for something. So please introduce our very special guest and talk about what's going on tonight, sir.
Well, thank you, Kevin. We have with us today Dr. Samir Kamar, who's coming up from Las Vegas, Nevada. He's a citizen of the world, he tells me. He'll have to explain all
sure.
of that. But he was an American citizen. Lived in the United States many, many years, but his parents traveled with the State Department, different things. But he's a medical doctor. He's interested in transforming medical delivery using something called direct primary care, which he can explain a little bit more. But it's an exciting movement, and I'm excited to have Dr. Kamar here with us today.
And now you've got an event this evening, correct?
That is true. At 5:30 at the State Capitol in the Lincoln Auditorium, Dr. Kamar will present what direct primary care is, how it can transform the medical delivery system, how it can impact and benefit people today, and then again at 7 o'clock.
Okay, and it's free?
It is free.
Okay, well, Dr. Kamar, thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
Well, first off, there's a lot of frustration, as Senator Thane will know, when it comes to education, but you probably times that by 1,000 when it comes to any of us dealing with our medical history, our medical service, as someone that deals with this each and every day, where are we as far as service and cost?
Well, unfortunately, we're not very up there on the list. I've been all around the world. I've had the privilege of living in many countries. I've been to over 100.
Wow.
And lived in many. When I say lived, I define that as having lived there for more than 2 years. My father was a senior diplomat for the United States, working for the United Nations for many years, and we had the privilege of living in many countries. So I'm in a unique position to compare healthcare systems, because we actually were using healthcare systems in many places. And despite this being the best country in the world, We have the best medical education in the world. We have the best technology, fantastic doctors. We are near the bottom when it comes to a lot of the statistics for medical care. And there are specific reasons for that that we'll get into. But the cost is absolutely out of control.
Boy, that's a shocker, though. No surprise about the cost, but when you're talking about medical care that we're at the bottom, we're the United States of America.
We are, which is why this is even more depressing for doctors like myself who have such faith in the country.
Right.
But that's why something has to be done. And this new model of healthcare that we're going to talk about today, I think, is going to be literally medical care salvation.
Now, Senator Thane, you can jump in if you want as well. Why are our costs so high?
I have certain opinions about that, being a professional in the medical field, and I'll share some of those with you today.
Well, we don't want to get you in trouble, but I mean...
No, I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
I believe that the culture in America right now is that we expect health insurance to cover everything in healthcare, not just the rare expensive catastrophes that insurance was designed to cover, but also primary care, which is the routine inexpensive care that we use most often. Insurance was not designed to cover primary care. Insurance, by definition, is the risk management of rare and expensive events. Every industry in insurance uses insurance in that way, except for medical care. In this country, right, when it comes to medical care, we expect insurance to even cover the $4 aspirin. Insurance wasn't designed for that. If you expect that insurance to cover routine events, you're going to be filing many more claims. If you file many more claims, your premiums go up. I liken that to you perhaps getting into a little fender bender,
right,
every
yes.
month.
Yes.
If you got into a fender bender every month, well, what happened to your premiums?
They'd go up.
They'd go up because you're filing too many claims. You are now high risk. Family physicians in America, by and large, that practice in an insurance-centric environment file 30 to 40 claims every single day.
Wow.
They're not just practicing medicine anymore. They're practicing how to file claims. That's where I think a lot of the healthcare costs go. And I believe that we can change that.
And I'd like to jump in here. And I think there's three major reasons why medical costs are so high in the United States. The first is most people, it's a cultural shift that we need to take place. Most people are trying to get someone else to pay for their medical expenses rather than trying to create a medical system where more people can afford to pay their own medical costs. Second, we're using insurance, as Dr. Kamar indicated, to pay for primary care. We need to separate those two issues. Third, about 88% of all medical spending is controlled by either the federal government through Medicare and Medicaid or insurance companies. So we pay a lot of money on premiums, but we're not controlling where that money goes. So if we had a greater utilization of health savings accounts where people had control over the money and started acting like consumers and were vested, so those three basic things. Now, we could go the other route, which many countries have done, and that's have a single-payer system and socialized medicine. That way the care can be rationed. But I don't think we need to do that.
Well, how much has the Affordable Care Act impacted medicine and medical service?
Well, I have some opinions about that, too, but those I'm going to keep to myself, Kevin.
Well, let me just add a broader general question. You have people that have paid their premiums, that have only gone to the doctor when they needed to, and they get their coverage canceled, and they're left without coverage. And those are the ones that actually care and want to pay for it.
So, to answer a different question, what we're suggesting, you know, what I'm suggesting, and Dr. Kamar, I think, also, because we just met a few minutes ago, so I shouldn't speak for him, we're trying to come up with ideas that can work within the Affordable Care Act. Now, some changes to the Affordable Care Act would be wonderful, but what we're talking about, for example, direct primary care, is a provision of the Affordable Care Act. So we don't have to change, you know, move heaven and earth and get Congress to act. We can do things in Idaho. You can do things as listeners in your personal life to take advantage of this opportunity in the current system.
Well, I think there's a feeling of frustration. I don't go to the doctor that much, but, you know, you go to a doctor, and half the time you don't get a doctor. You get a nurse or physician's assistant, and this is some of the big-time operators around here. And the first thing they ask you is, A, do you have insurance? Well, we're going to have to check and see if your insurance covers this. Look, I pay my insurance all the time. I'm a good little boy. And then, well, you know, this is the most latest test, but we're going to have to call your insurance to see if they provide that first. A level of frustration. I mean, you probably deal with this each and every day.
We used to until we switched to this new model called direct primary care. The trouble right now is that roughly it's been estimated by a study by Merritt Hawkins that just came out a few days ago, only 10% of graduates want to go into primary care, graduates in medical school. And the reason for that is there is a very high degree of loan burden that exists when medical students graduate. They have to look for a specialty that allows them to pay those loans back. Primary care fields, by and large, are some of the lowest paying medical fields in practice. And so a lot of the medical students choose surgical specialties or choose specialties like cardiology or gastroenterology to be able to pay back those loans. The problem with that is you have just shaken the foundation of primary care, which is what's necessary for every great healthcare system. You need a fantastic foundation of primary care to funnel those surgical and specialist visits. For that reason, we're suffering. And most people now looking for a primary care doctor have trouble finding a primary care doctor because there's this shortage that's starting to come into play. And that's part of the reason why you have all sorts of other types of facilities available, such as retail clinics and so forth, to get patients that access, which they so rightly deserve. When it comes to the cost and when it comes to insurance, it goes back to what we just talked about, where everybody now expects insurance to cover primary care. There was a time 60 or 70 years ago where you didn't pull out your insurance card when you saw your family doctor.
Right.
You used your insurance card when you went into the hospital. And that's part of where we have to fracture the American mindset.
Well, it's the magic of the copay.
It's the magic of the copay. Yeah. However, we now also have to realize you don't really need insurance for primary care. Now, the argument against that is, well, doctor, primary care is expensive. If I don't have insurance, I can't afford a $150 or a $200 visit.
Exactly.
The thing is, what if you could make it inexpensive? What if you could make primary care affordable? And direct primary care is a new model of primary care, which not only makes the cost of health care affordable in primary care, but because there's a higher degree of care in primary care, in indirect primary care, you actually offset a lot of the downstream costs, such as specialist referrals and complications that then cost more for everyone.
Well, I feel sometimes when you go to the primary care facility, they feel bad because you're only in there for 5 minutes.
Well, there's a reason for that. Doctors get paid per visit. It's one of the problems with primary care today. If I'm getting paid $100 per patient visit, as much as I went to medical school to take care of patients, there comes a time in most physicians' practices from a business standpoint where each patient begins looking like a number. And they have to see between 30 to 40 patients every day to be able to cover their overhead for paying their staff, paying for their office, paying some of the student loans back, and then taking something home as well.
And liability.
Absolutely. That leads to a national average of about 7 minutes per doctor, per patient.
Right.
It's very unsustainable. And it's part of the reason I think our malpractice rates are so high. How can you provide effective quality care within 7 to 10 minutes? To cover all the things that you need to hear about preventive medicine, to take care of the diabetes, to teach you about how to eat or how to drink. It's impossible in 7 to 10 minutes. And it's, again, driven from a fee-per-service, fee-per-visit system. If you take that away, the system becomes much more appealing.
Well, then you forgot, you know, I have a friend of mine whose son is, in residency. But he's racked up over $300,000 in student loans.
Sure.
We know that interest isn't low either.
I sure is paying.
Yeah, exactly. More coming up here at 580-KIDO. If you have a question about direct primary care, 580-5436. 580-KIDO, time for traffic.
KIDO and MCA Nashville want to send you to the Daytona 500. Details soon on 580-KIDO.
All right, 580-KIDO, we continue on talking about health care, health insurance, and direct primary care. Let me see. Let's hear a little bit more about this forum tonight.
Right, so direct primary care now is a new model of health care that's coming up really quickly in the U.S. It's a model by where consumers pay directly for primary care services to physicians or physician practices. My own is called MedLion. We are based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. We contract with providers in 22 states, including Idaho. And employers or individual families can pay us an average of somewhere between $50 to $100 a month to access full-blown primary care. Some of the advantages are that you get in very quickly. Our doctors have patient panels that are about a third of the national average, and so you can come in the same day or the next day. The visits are not your national average of 7 minutes anymore. The visits are actually about 30 minutes on average. In addition, we practice a lot of what we call telemedicine. Telemedicine is something that isn't new. It's something that pretty much every doctor has practiced since whenever they took call. But now, with the advent of technology, it's been a little easier for us now to see patients online or through the telephone. Not every doctor's visit is absolutely necessary. And so we can reduce the traffic flow and increase the inconvenience, the convenience for patients.
Does that really happen? Because here's another one, that one of my favorites. And, boy, this isn't a joy for you to come in here from Las Vegas to hear this, but, you know, you need to call your doctor and you never get your doctor.
That's absolutely right. Well, doctors don't get paid to take your call.
Right, and they said, well, if you have a problem, call me. So you call them and you get, you know, and then they don't call you back.
Because they don't get paid to take your call.
Right.
And most doctors now who just run it as a business will see that. There are many doctors out there, of course, who care about their patients and will answer the call. They'll take the call.
Right.
They have to. You're their patients. But by and large, telemedicine is shunned because of that reason.
Well, you know, that's what I heard. You know, I was dealing with a friend, and they said, well, the doctor never called me back. I'm talking to someone else. Well, they're busy doing something. I said, whoa. I don't care if they're busy with their life. They're a doctor.
The national average is about 3,000 patients to a doctor on the panel. Most doctors don't even know how many patients they have in their practice. Their goal is to fill up the roster as much as possible, 30 to 40 patients to be seen throughout the day. Sometimes it's a little less, sometimes it's a little more. It is very difficult for them to find time to do a telephone consultation. Now, just yesterday, I believe, Governor Cuomo in New York passed a law that said telemedicine visits should equate in reimbursement levels for in-person visits. We're seeing a trend now towards reimbursement of telemedicine that's going to actually drive more telemedicine to
depends on what the markup is. So it's all become a business.
It's always been a business.
Yeah. Let's go to Tea Party Bob at 580KIDO. I was just talking about you. Good morning.
That's not good.
Well, no, it was about how, you know, you got booted from your policy.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did find something else. It just cost a little bit more money. As usual. But again, we're on Medicare, so it's a whole different story. You know, gentlemen, good morning. I understand the basic premise of primary care and the benefits when it is done privately and combined with catastrophic insurance like Samaritan's Purse. My question is, under Obamacare, wouldn't direct primary care wind up costing more money and produce less personal patient care because of the federal requirements? And the second part is, Would direct private care be a replacement for Medicaid expansion?
I'll take the first part of the question, please, and I'll let Senator take the second. Thank you for calling in. Direct primary care is actually a part of the Affordable Care Act. It was created before the Affordable Care Act was implemented. I am one of the pioneers of the model, and I created it to take care of the 55 million uninsured Americans in this country. It was included in the Affordable Care Act because we felt that it was something that could actually help reduce health care costs. And the reason for that is actually very simple. If you get high-impact primary care and preventive care up front at a more affordable rate, it's easier then to manage the more expensive medical conditions that may come about later that were not managed as effectively in the beginning. That's how direct primary care works. It's actually a part of the Affordable Care Act. And when you're taking care of about 60 to 80% of health care needs under a capped cost, you can then save the insurance, save the Medicare, save the Medicaid for the more expensive costs down the road, which hopefully won't come up about as much because you've taken care of the patient very well in the direct primary care end.
Can I interject one thing? Is there going to be money paid out by the federal government to the direct primary care physicians?
Right now, most of the people who are paying for direct primary care are employers. There are group associations, trade associations, unions, and a lot of individual families, particularly those families that don't have very low deductibles. They have higher deductible health care plans. They have to pay a lot of money out of pocket. And to keep those out-of-pocket costs low and capped, they go into a direct primary care program where they can keep those out-of-pocket costs low and get quality care.
And as far as Medicaid and alternatives to Medicaid expansion, I think this is a little bit more of a political issue, but Medicaid expansion is supposed to deal with people below 100% of poverty. And I'm not a fan of Medicaid expansion, and so I see a greater investment in primary care, even if we transform the state CAT fund, that's a catastrophic indigent fund, to move toward providing more primary care, or even putting some money into community health centers, because that's where the uninsured go right now. There's about 150,000 people in Idaho that go to community health centers. So I think there is an alternative to Medicaid expansion, using local resources so we can write our own rules. But it's a little bit different issue than direct primary care, which typically is more on the private side, as Dr. Kamar pointed out, businesses, individuals, big businesses, small businesses. So they're not quite the same issue.
All right, Tea Party Bob, thank you very much. Gentlemen, one more time tonight, if people would like to attend.
We have a meeting tonight at 5:30 at the State Capitol in the Lincoln Auditorium, and again at 7. If you don't know where the Lincoln Auditorium is, it's in the new underground wings on the west side, on the Senate side, and we'd love to have you there.
Dr. Kamar, thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me. I enjoyed being on the show.
You're listening to 580 KIDO.
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And we do care about our community here. Kevin Miller in the morning. Joining us now is Marie Martin to talk about Rachel's Challenge. Marie, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Not bad. How goes it in the schools, by the way?
Oh, same old, same old.
You sound kind of down.
Well, you know, this weather is just something else. I think everybody's got a little case of
Aren't we spoiled, though, with the endless days of sunshine here that, you know, a little
God.
Inversion, we get a little
the
gloomy?
Glowing orb came out for a few minutes yesterday, and I was like, oh, I hear angels singing. The sun is out. And then it went away, and that was it. So
especially,
I can't wait till spring.
Especially on mornings like this.
I know, right?
I'm telling you.
So we have some pretty exciting stuff going on at our school this week.
Well, let's and tell people your school and what's going on.
Well, I am with Lake Hazel Middle School, and this week is our bullying awareness / kindness week. And in years past, it's always just been bullying prevention week. But this year, we are doing something super special at the school. It's called Rachel's Challenge. Rachel Scott, if you remember that name, was the first student who was gunned down in the Columbine Massacre. And that was, gosh, that was in 1999, so it's been years now. But after her death, her parents discovered a bunch of writing that she had done and some plans that she had for spreading kindness in her community, and they decided that they could not let that die with her. And so they founded the Rachel's Challenge nonprofit organization, and this organization comes out and speaks to schools not only about bullying but just about spreading some kindness in your community in general, because every child, you know, has things that might be going on at home, or, you know, things that are bothering them at school. And sometimes all it takes is a kind word to turn things around for one person, because they get a kind word, and then they give a kind word. And in Rachel's vernacular, it's to start a chain reaction of kindness. So we have a bunch of activities going on this week surrounding making our school a kinder community for each other. And then what we're super excited about is we're doing a community event, and it's free to anybody in the community. The subject matter is appropriate for sixth graders and up, because they do talk about the Columbine shootings. And we're lucky enough to have Rachel's brother, Craig, as our presenter this year. So he'll talk about that day, and he'll talk about Rachel's legacy and how to start that chain reaction, not just in the school, but in the community as well. So it's a free event, and we're holding it at Mountain View High School in the auditorium. Seats 1,000 people, and we want to fill every seat. So we encourage anybody, you know, in your listening audience that wants to attend is welcome. So So we hope we see a lot of people there, and we hope we start a little chain reaction of our own here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how concerned you are as a parent, as someone who has kids in the school and knows kids in the schools, about school safety. You know, we always seem to take things for granted, and then we have these tragedies, these school shootings that happen.
Kevin, you would just be shocked at how many kids are just on the verge of either harming themselves or harming somebody else. There are kids that go home to extreme poverty, to abuse, to no supervision, and so they end up getting themselves into trouble, and they don't know how to get themselves out of trouble once they're in. And it does. It spreads to the community at large. Our school in particular is very overcrowded as well. And so there's just that whole dynamic of too many people in a space. And a lot of times the kids are just not kind to each other. And that spreads like a virus. Well, we'd like the virus to be positive and have it spread the other way. Rachel's challenge has actually literally saved the lives of over 500 children, because there have been kids who have said, literally, I had already written my suicide note and I had already laid out the rope. And when I got home from school that day, I was going to kill myself. And then we heard Rachel's challenge, and it just gave me a glimmer of hope, and I did not kill myself. And any little tiny ray of hope that we can get out to just even one kid, that one kid passes it on, and it just makes everything a little better for everybody. And when you have a more positive community, it's a better community, a better environment to learn in. And that's what these kids are here for. They should feel safe when they're here. They should feel safe with each other. And they should just be able to put their learning hats on and be students.
I think the challenge that we have today, and Columbine seems like ancient history, but, you know, these video games, the music, the videos, but specifically how the kids today are wired to the computer, and you have the devaluing of human life on these video games that really has, you know, the exact opposite value when it comes to real life.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of mechanisms out there that just inherently desensitize kids to human feelings and the value, like you said, the value of human life. I hate to sound like an old square, but I really think, like, texting, the kids don't pick up the phone and talk to each other anymore. You know, and they'll deliver news to each other that is, you know, huge via a text. Well, they're taking all the emotion out of a lot of things. And I think part of what Rachel's challenge helps the kids realize is that, you know, there's a person behind every word, whether you say it or text it or it's on social media, and that human life is valuable. And your life is valuable, and therefore the life of your classmates is valuable, and the life of everyone in your community is valuable. But I think we fight an uphill battle with a lot of electronics today because they do trivialize how much life is worth.
And one more time, Marie, if people want to get involved.
6:30 at the Mountain View High School Auditorium, and it is free for the entire community. Recommended for sixth graders and up.
Well, Marie, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That's Marie Martin joining us here. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. Let's get you to traffic.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Oh, I bet you say that to all the girls that come on.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO, and it's 852. Let's go to the phones, and we go to Pro-Life with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO.
Yes, you were talking about problems in the taxis and medical and all over the place. A lot of it has to do with licensing. When governments license things, they create monopolies, scarcities, standard practices, and there's no innovation.
What would be the alternative if they don't license things? Fly an airplane without a license? How about practice law without a license?
No, all of those things, there would be legal practicing, a legal certification, A, B, C, D, there'd be all kinds of different ones.
Who would certify it if it's not the government?
Well, that organization would certify.
What organization?
What's that?
What organization?
Well, I mean, there would be the XYZ Legal Association, and you would go to those because those were your choice of lawyers.
Uh-huh.
Or your choice of... Now, I think when it has to do with physical safety, the government can get involved. But when it's not involved with physical safety, the government needs to get out of the licensing business.
What about doctors?
No, they don't need to be licensed.
What are you, some crazy libertarian?
Yeah, of course.
I thought you were a constitutionalist.
Yeah, I'm a constitutional libertarian.
The problem with the libertarians is down with government, let's legalize dope.
No, that's stupid.
What do you mean it's stupid? That's their agenda.
You can't legalize something that's wrong.
According to them, there should be no laws, just like you. You've joined the dope-smoking libertarians.
No, I'm not a dope-smoking libertarian. Good Christians like me, we don't smoke dope, and we don't approve of it.
Well, that's reassuring.
But you can't let the government license it.
Well, wait a minute. I still don't get what you're talking about.
Well, it's pretty simple.
You have to have some type of standard.
Well, hey, food is the most important thing, so let's start licensing the farmers so then our food costs will go up.
Well, don't they have the FDA that you got to have safe food so you can't poison people?
Yeah, well, but you could license.
You're all for poisoning people now?
No, of course not.
Hey, here, let me hit you with this one, okay?
All right.
Let's go to our friends, the Chinese.
Right.
You remember them.
Yeah, I do know those guys.
Yeah, you're all about China.
No, I'm not.
Well, you need to be a little bit more inclusive like me.
Okay.
All right, so the Chinese government, they don't have the same standards when it comes to food safety. Look at how many times people have recalled dog food, and we love dogs, we love cats. They're God's creatures of unconditional love. Why? Because the Chinese put lead in them. They don't have the same government oversight that we do, and they poison our animals. Or food that we've had here, because they don't have the same standards that we do.
Okay, now see, our government is supposedly making Chinese food that comes here for our pets and for us.
What do you mean Chinese food? Like what? Beef fried rice?
I don't eat dog food, but our dogs do. But anyway, supposedly our government is protecting us against contamination by Chinese wrongful processing.
Right.
But they're not really doing that. But if there's
no standards, then we're,
no.
Time to go to Pro-Life's house and eat strawberries.
No, I would start the XYZ dog food licensing company, and if I would go to China, and if they were not doing it right, their product would never be sold under my
name. Who has more authority, you or the U.S. government?
Well, God does.
Well, God bless you.
Okay.
All right, Pro-Life with us at 580KIDO. To quote Bill Riley, the most ridiculous item of the day.
People Magazine, USA Today, CNN, and the New York Post. Just some of the national news outlets reporting on the case of a stolen pack of gum and the 9-year-old arrested for it. Post Falls police took the boy into custody last week after he failed to appear in court twice. The police chief told us today they tried to get out of the arrest but couldn't get around the judge's order. He wasn't available to talk on camera, but said he understands the interest from across the country. The chief says the public has a right to be shocked by this case. Post Falls police say it's important for the public to know, even though the boy was arrested, he was never handcuffed or put in jail. Officers transported him to court. The Kootenai County prosecutor apologized in a statement this week. He said in part, "I have concluded that my office's request to have an arrest warrant issued was a mistake. I regret this having taken place and will do everything in my power to avoid this type of mistake."
All right, I'm sorry the newscaster there is putting us to sleep. But God bless him at Krem 2. Kevin Miller in the morning here. I love it, and Ray Amaya played the clip earlier, of the police chief there in Post Falls saying, well, we need to make changes. Why is it that every time somebody screws up, they never just say, my bad, my bad, my bad, instead of, well, we need to take a look at how we're going to how we're going to prosecute little 9-year-olds for stealing gum. And I know, Jim, I got your email, yes, for failing to show up in court. Well, half the time we're lucky if the 9-year-olds show up in school. And the parents didn't have a way to get them there. And yes, you're right. People need to understand there are consequences to actions. People need to understand there are consequences. But look at how many man hours were wasted, the embarrassment in post falls. Like I said, it's like Chief Masterson and the SWAT team when they went after the guy that rescued puppies. Look at the detail that you can Google that story. Of course, the only people that stood up for the puppy grabber was me. I mean, come on. We've got enough bad guys here. Check out Ada County, Canyon County, that we need our police that we love and support dealing with them, not the gum stealers, or I'm sorry, the alleged gum stealers, right? A little common sense, guys. It's not that difficult. 33 in Star. 33 right now. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580-KIDO. Don't forget, 580-KIDO, we want to hear from you. Do you support a rise in gas tax to pay for Idaho's roads? Vote now at 580KIDO.com. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith. KIDO.